seniors can be more productive and have more purpose than just getting on a bus going to the zoo.
Hi, I'm Carl Vaders, and welcome to The Church Lobby, Conversations on Faith and Ministry. My guest today is Pastor Mike Bayer, and we'll be talking about a variety of subjects, including how his YouTube channel, that he started at 81 years of age, reached 25,000 subscribers in less than 6 months, and how it's providing him with a second source of income. Mike is a friend of mine, and he's one of the most engaging, innovative octogenarians you'll ever meet. We'll talk about intentional ministry to senior adults, how to set up your church's YouTube channel for better engagement, what to consider as you look to make an income outside the walls of the church, and a whole lot more. And don't forget to stick around when the interview is done. I'll come back with my short take on an exciting way to utilize the skills and experience of your seniors to meet the needs of the next generation of seniors. Well, Mike Bayer, welcome to the Church Lobby. It's good to have you here today.
Thank you, Carl. We go back quite a ways. It's great to be on with you, Guy.
We do. We're both Orange County, California folks. You were about as early an early adopter of our ministry of helping small churches thrive as there can be.
Yeah, that's right. I remember having coffee with you over at Fashion Island and with your brand new book, man. You were ready to rock and roll.
It was pretty much warm in my hands, and you were one of the first ones to call up to encourage me, and we sat down, we had coffee about it, and since then, we've remained in touch occasionally, not as much as either one of us would like to, because we're both kind of busy and doing some pretty cool stuff, you especially. Yeah. Doing some really, really cool stuff. So give our audience, first of all, a quick overview of your life and ministry and what brings you to the point you're at today, and then we're going to get into all the cool stuff you're doing right now.
Well, I've been in ministry for about 50 years. It bounced around through several denominations. I took over a seniors group. It wasn't a church yet, part of a church here in Southern California. I was 48 years old, and a pastor asked me to come on month to month till they found a permanent pastor. I've been there for 36 years now. Can you believe it? Wow. But the church is inside an 18,000 resident retirement community, gated community. So there's uniqueness to that. But before that, I was, I started out as a brethren pastor, went to Talbot Seminary, ended up in Calvary Chapel, and then in the current denomination I am now, and in this particular church for 35 years. So that's a nutshell.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about several things. One, I want to talk to you about ministering to seniors. It's one of the questions I get a lot as I travel, especially when I'm speaking in person, because a lot of the churches, a lot of the pastors who come to me, their churches are growing older. And so the question is, what do we do about this? Is there even valid ministry to seniors? There is, of course. So I want to talk to you about that. But mostly I want to talk to you about, you've really made a huge ministry on YouTube. So give us a quick overview of what that's about, and then we'll dive back into the retirement community stuff and into YouTube. But just give us a quick overview of what that looks like.
So I started recording my sermons 14 years ago. So I have a YouTube channel that is nothing but my sermons. When I turned 80 years old, I sat down and tried to figure out, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Every 10 years, I make a 10-year plan. So at 70, I was going to preach till 80. So at 80, I'm going to preach till 90. But, there was some more that I wanted to do. So anyway, I started a YouTube channel at 80 years old. It now has 44,000 subscribers and got monetized in 9 weeks. It is not a faith-based channel. There are faith-based channels. You could call my channel that has my sermons, that's faith-based. Mine is faith integrated. In other words, I don't shy away from talking about the Lord, but I started out that channel. I was going to talk about the lived experience I had, and I call the old me living better. But my fourth video, which was how I started my channel and the 3 months I took to get it going, that video went viral. It's got over 450,000 views now. And it pushed me into the YouTube growth sector, is what it's called. And so I sort of made a shift. And for the last 16, 17 months, I've been helping people in the fourth quarter of their life get on YouTube, start a channel, whether it's faith-based or not. But that's what that channel is all about. Old me living better, man. Along with my theme, which I got from early on in my ministry here, if you ain't dead, you ain't done. That's got a lot of traction, so.
Yeah, so many pieces, obviously, that we want to talk about. Senior ministry, bivocational, making money off YouTube. How do we monetize that? What does a church do to get their YouTube channel a little bit more recognized? And I also want to talk with you a little bit about your work with pastors who go into retirement. I interviewed Sam Rayner a few months ago, and we talked about the upcoming wave of pastor retirement and the concern about those who are coming in. But you've got some interesting thoughts about kind of the other end of that as well. So if those subjects don't interest 99% of the listeners in one way or another, then I don't know how to do it. So let's jump right in and let's kind of go through kind of chronologically your story by starting with you've been decades now doing ministry in a senior retirement community. And as I said earlier, one of the big questions I get asked is, can you have a church vibrant with seniors? So if somebody just came to you, a pastor whose congregation has unintentionally aged, they're not doing it by design, their congregation has just gotten older and they're concerned, and they come to you and go, what do I do? Can I even have valid ministry with seniors? Where do you start to have that conversation with them?
I'd answer it in two ways. The obvious one is that there's a big opening in retirement communities for seniors at churches. The other issue is you have a church that it has grown old. The conventional thinking in dealing with seniors is you have a seniors program within a bigger church. I've always been opposed to having a seniors program because you're relegated to bus trips and those kinds of things. And I think seniors can be more productive and have more purpose than just getting on a bus going to the zoo. A seniors church is like any other church. My church, it's averaged over the 3-5 years, about 100, 125 people. I've graduated two entire congregations to heaven. The first congregation, when I came there, they're all gone. The second congregation is all gone. I'll probably go with this third one. But we've treated the congregation as a viable congregation, a men's ministry, women's ministry. We don't have baby dedications. I don't do very many weddings. I do a few funerals. So there's a lot of things that I don't have to do because it's a seniors ministry, but I treat this church as I would treat any other church, with integrity, sharing the word, compassion with the people. Seniors need a little more hand-holding, I think, than possibly other folks. Their hand-holding is a little different when you don't have kids or a lot of different things. Part of my ministry is preparing people for heaven. So I've also got that in the back of my mind because so many of them have gone on before me. But I don't think doing a seniors ministry, if it's strictly seniors, is any different than doing any other kind of ministry. And I think if you try to accommodate too much to seniors, I think the seniors will feel that they feel diminished with that. And so I've never treated seniors as seniors. I just treat them as saints of God in the church.
Yeah, there are two things about that I love. One, the idea of intentionality. And secondly, the idea of not second-classing senior citizens. I think when people look around and they see a church that's aging, obviously at times and in certain situations, that can be one of the signs of a declining congregation, but it doesn't have to be. To automatically treat an aging congregation as a problem is to unintentionally say that being old is a problem and that having a church filled with seniors is a problem. So if we turn that around and go, okay, maybe we're not bad at attracting young people. Maybe we're really good at ministering with seniors. And maybe if we lean into that with some more intentionality, we can do it even better. Now, you've done it and are doing it in a retirement community, but is it different, do you think, in a community that is mixed ages? It's not necessarily a retirement community. It just happens to be an older congregation within a community of people of all ages.
So there are several churches in my area outside of our gated community who have senior congregations. Now, when I say senior, I say fourth quarter of life. I'm going to say 65 to 90. That's kind of where I draw it at. Some people make that a little bit lower. So there are about five churches in our area that are senior congregations. And we partner with them in doing different things. We do church things, not senior things. And it's pretty exciting. We especially get together on day of prayer, Thanksgiving. Sometimes we do shared meals together. So that gives a bigger feeling. You get two or three smaller senior churches together. One of them, fortunately, has a beautiful facility, and that's the facility that we use. But it's wonderful. We all get together. Matter of fact, some of their people come to our group. Some of ours go to their group. So there's a mixing between that, and it's real healthy, I think, for a community. That's one way that I've approached it.
Yeah, I love that. Ministry changes, and ministry changes faster now than it ever did. And in a congregation that skews younger, you're going to have quicker changes. And I assume in a congregation filled with seniors, the changes are going to come more slowly. But have you noticed any particular changes in the way you do senior ministry over the last decades that might be helpful for those who are trying to figure out what senior ministry should look like today?
Yes and no. Obviously, music is a big deal.
Yeah.
and so we have a wonderful worship leader, and we sing. We don't have a hymn book, but we do sing some modern choruses, but we also sing a lot of the old standards. I think it's really important that a senior congregation has to have enough connection to the past so that it doesn't feel disconnected from the past, but you can still introduce new things gradually to them. And so a lot of the modern worship songs we do, but it's also with older hymns built in. We do not have our own building. We meet in a clubhouse. We haven't tried to make it look like a church. It looks like a lot of other storefronts or warehouse churches from that standpoint. However, one of the things that I think that is so important, we treat the people as if we were, and I emphasize as if we were, a viable body, a viable church in a viable building. Now, the building doesn't matter. The people matter. One of the problems is with senior ministries is trying to accommodate to the seniors rather than the seniors being comfortable in the setting that they're in. We try to make them comfortable in the setting that they're in. They grew up in a church. I've got Lutherans, Presbyterians, AG, Pentecost. I got all in a retirement community. You get a lot of people from a lot of different faith dimensions. So I don't emphasize one thing or the other. We try to do a service that, especially for old people, they don't want to be jarred out of their seats. They want to be ministered to. They want to be loved on. We pray for them. And they can then go away from there and enjoy the rest of their week and be involved in some of the other things we do.
Yeah, I love that. Because you've been there long enough now. You started where the seniors were really the Bing Crosby generation. And then... they became the Led Zeppelin generation. And I think the next group of seniors is going to be the MTV generation, right? Gen X is starting to become grandparents now. So that's the next one coming down the pike. Have you noticed shifts in those generational approaches?
Yeah. One of the biggest clubs that we have here in our retirement community is the Boomers and the Rock and Roll Club. And I mean, they got hundreds and hundreds of members of those clubs. And a lot of our congregation belong to those clubs. You know, the baby boomers, the oldest ones turn 80 this year. I mean, so it's a very aging kind of a situation. Dynamics change with age. I haven't sensed that yet with us too much in terms of style and everything, but culturally, there's a lot of big changes underway.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've talked about the seniors thing. I hope that gives encouragement to some of the pastors out there who their congregation did not age intentionally, perhaps, but they can move forward intentionally ministering to seniors. There is a viable path forward for that. But what I want to do now is I want to shift towards the YouTube stuff, because you've done some things on YouTube that I have no idea how to do, so I'm intentionally going into it blind. But you've got a YouTube channel, and it's called Old Me Living Better. And we talked a little bit about how you started it. Give us an idea. Why did you begin? Well, first, let's start with the church stuff. Let's talk about if a church out there has a YouTube channel and they're trying to get more than two or three views per week on it, or maybe they are debating whether or not to start a YouTube channel, if there's any validity to it. Do you have any pieces of advice for pastors about using YouTube well to use it through their congregation and through the ministry that they're doing?
I think a church channel is going to be reaching the people within the church. The church channel that we have is designed for our congregation, people who have moved away, friends of family. We've only got maybe 250 subscribers to that channel. It's 14 years old. I do have some videos on there that have 4,000 or 5,000 views, but for the most part, it's 200 to 300. And that represents sort of the universe of the people that know about that channel and are interested in it. I think most church channels will serve their local church, maybe because the pastor is well known or whatever, they will have a larger following. But in the long run, a church channel, I think the purpose of a church channel is exposure. We all have to live with the algorithm, which will push out our videos to a certain audience. So if you have a church channel, it's not going to push as much as you'd like it to be this way. The algorithm is not going to shove your church channel to all of the atheists and unbelievers on YouTube. They're going to shove it to other people that like that kind of content.
Yep.
If you think your church is going to be a outreach ministry for salvation, not saying that people won't get saved through watching your church channel, but that's never going to happen because YouTube is built so that can happen because it doesn't shove, unless you have a lot of subscribers, you're a mega church and you've got, you know, 100,000 or 50,000 subscribers, that may change the dynamic slightly. But a church channel is, in my opinion, is not an outreach channel. It's for the believers, for your church, and it stays within kind of a narrow niche on YouTube.
Yeah, plus I've noticed the church channels, like the YouTube channels where you're watching the pastor preach on Sunday morning, the ones that do get a large audience, either one, have a very famous and well-known pastor, or two, they're constantly trying to bait the rage machine. They're constantly courting controversy because controversy does fit the algorithm. And so I don't recommend that at all because we've got more than enough rage baiting and more than enough people chasing controversy. And so that's something we've got to be aware of. If we're simply putting out good biblical content, the algorithm simply doesn't serve that all that well, you're telling us.
Well, I'm saying that, so here's the key to a YouTube video. It's thumbnail, title, first 30 seconds in content. Those are the four pillars of any good video. Okay. So if you're a church channel, you need to make sure your thumbnail and title reflect what the content is. Otherwise, it's going to be interpreted as clickbait. And there's a lot of that goes on YouTube. And I've seen church channels do that. It's a controversial topic or whatever. And then you get into the content, but it's not that controversial. I think to be honest with ourselves and with those who come to the channel or to a video, the thumbnail and the title need to be consistent with whatever the content is. That's really important.
Okay, so for those who aren't on YouTube and don't understand the language, thumbnail means what?
The thumbnail is the, like on Netflix or Amazon, you turn down on your TV and you'll see a little photo that represents that movie or that event, whatever it is. That's a thumbnail for Netflix, thumbnail for Amazon. So YouTube has thumbnails also. Those thumbnails are what attract people or turn people off. And so there's a lot of discussion amongst creators making thumbnails that will entice people to click on the thumbnail. Next is the title that's underneath the thumbnail. And so you want to make that curiosity-based or challenge-based or whatever. It's important if you can do that. But that's the thumbnail. That's the visual that you first see.
Okay, so if the thumbnail every week is just whatever random photo or whatever random clip YouTube happens to pick for you, you shouldn't just simply go with YouTube's random
No,
clip.
No, not at all.
You need to create something of your own.
I have scaled my channel now so I can afford to hire a professional thumbnail designer, but AI has gotten so good. I've been using ChatGPT to design some of my thumbnails now. Cheaper than hiring my thumbnail designer. Maybe not quite as good, but no, the thumbnail needs to be designed. You don't want to let YouTube pick the thumbnail because you need to get text. Most of the time, you need to have some kind of text on the thumbnail. Sometimes no text, but most of the time, you need to have some text on the thumbnail. You need to have, in my case, my channel is branded. Every one of my thumbnails has my face on it. All of that is intentional so that when anybody sees one of my videos or sees the thumbnail, they immediately recognize that it's me. The text changes, the background changes, those kinds of things change. I think a church channel, to be effective, has to use some kind of a strategy. They have to figure out what kind of a brand, this is a marketing term, what kind of a, what do they want the world to see them as, and make get a template and work off of that template, but change the text, changed up the backgrounds and whatever on a regular basis.
Okay, so the thumbnail is the first, the title is the second. And here's what I've noticed a lot of churches do. The title of every video starts with the name of their church, which I look at and always go, but they're on your channel. They know the name of your church, right? And then maybe it'll even be the date. And you'll go, but people don't care what date it was. So what should the title have in order to attract attention and to make sense?
So my opinion on the thumbnail, let's see. So I'm doing a series right now in the book of Colossians. I do have the verses that I'm going through, but I do not use the title of the sermon for the title of the thumbnail. I try to
Okay.
find something that is curiosity provoking, something that the message that I just shared, there was a key point, I answered a question that people would have in their mind. And so that's how I feel a thumbnail is probably best created with probably 3 to 4 words max on a thumbnail. You don't want to crowded thumbnail with a lot of words because every thumbnail will be viewed on either a television, a iPad, or a smartphone. So there's three different sizes of it. If you see it on television, yeah, you could, it's easy to make out, but if you're looking at it on your phone, about half of my subscribers watch me on their phones. So I've got to keep in mind that that thumbnail is going to real be small. So the words have to stand out as.
Like about the size of your thumbnail, which is why it's called that, I
Yeah,
guess.
right. Yeah. No, you got to use
Look at your
large
thumbnail.
text.
How much content could you put on that? That's what you
Yeah.
got to deal with. That's the size
Yeah.
it's going to be. Yeah. And now a short break to talk about something else. If you like the content you're hearing, here are two things you can do for us. First, forward this podcast to a friend. Second, consider becoming a financial supporter through Patreon, Venmo, or PayPal. Just go to carlvaders.com/support. For as little as $3 a month, you can help us put these resources into the hands of the ministries that need them the most. Our support link is in the show notes. Okay, so this thumbnail title, and then you said the next most important thing was the first 30 seconds.
Well, when it comes to sermons in a church channel, not so much so.
Okay.
But if you're talking about a channel that is a faith-based, not a church or faith integrated, to get monetized on YouTube, you have to have 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 watch hours. So it's a fair amount of work
Yeah.
to get to that point. So subscribers are rather easy to get. It's the watch hours. That means people got
Got
to watch your video long enough so that it gets credited to the watch hours. So every video, you can go into the analytics and you need a 60 to 70% during the first 30 seconds that will stay with that video. If you do that, you're doing good. The problem is most people give very little thought to this and they say, "Hi, my name's Mike. Welcome to my channel." Well, 99% of the people have already clicked away by the time you say that. You have to lead with something that is engaging, something that is curiosity provoking. You know, I read a book today that literally changed my life. It's
Right.
something like that. And then you go on from there, you do your introduction after that first 30 seconds. So the first 30 seconds is called the hook. for a reason. There's a book that I really like that says, actually, if you don't win them in the first 3 seconds, you've lost them. You know, we stand in front of our microwaves and say, hurry up. Because of the scrolling nature that especially younger audiences have on their phones, they're not going to spend a lot of time figuring out what you got to say. You got to get it up front and get them engaged.
And for a lot of church folks, pastors especially, we're used to doing communication when people are physically in the room. So you do have time, because they're not going to walk out the first 30 seconds aren't engaging. They chose to get in their car, come to your church, come in the building. So they're going to give you a little more time, and you know, and they're likely to stay till the end of the service. So you got a bit of grace. Don't be boring anyway, but you don't have that immediate urgency. But every one of us who's listening to this has scrolled through our phones, and we know. Pause and ask yourself, how much attention do you give a video or a clip when you see it? You think everybody else has short attention spans. Yours is just as bad. Mine is just as bad when we're online. That's the nature of online. So you talked about the first 30 seconds, and it isn't as big a deal for church. But I'm going to throw one thing out here just as my recommendation, and you can comment on it or let it go if you'd like. I really encourage churches, do not put your song service in your YouTube clip. Even if you live stream it, go to the start of the sermon, because one, it won't look good, and two, it will not sound good. You may even have a band that sounds great in the room, but unless you have an expert mixing it for online, it will not sound good. And even if it does sound good, that's not what people are going to your YouTube channel for. They're going for the message. That's where you need to start.
I agree with you 100%, because, you know, there are channels that do nothing but Christian music. That's fine. I think that one of the hard things we have to understand, moving from something you're doing live onto and then YouTube, it's two different things. I'm working with several pastors and retired missionaries right now who are trying to start their YouTube channels. And one of the problems is they think a talking head video is like preaching to a congregation. And it isn't. It's a whole different kind of a situation. I describe it, and others do, as the coffee shop rule. I'm sitting down in a coffee shop with my best friend, and I'm having a conversation. That's the kind of tone and the expression, because the viewer on the other end will relate to that more than a preaching mentality. And there are some great pastors, besides their messages, are making effective use of that, jumping on YouTube with shorts and other things, and bringing it down to a very personal level, like you're out in the courtyard with them or a coffee shop with them. That's very effective. And I think that's so important. But it's hard to break if you've been a longtime pastor. It's hard enough for people to sit in front of a camera and start talking and thinking there's thousands of people there. You don't do that. You think there's one person there. When I started my YouTube channel, I had my wife sit in the living room across from me, and I recorded 10 different videos that way, just trying to get used to it.
Yeah. When I was younger, older pastors occasionally would say things like, yeah, I don't care if five people show up to your church. You pre-check there's 500 there, which first of all is bad advice.
Yeah.
If there's five people there, get them around a table. Don't talk to them like there's 500 in the room, because it disconnects you from it. But I kind of understand the reasoning behind that, because there is a crowd presentation manner that you have.
Yeah.
Online is exactly the opposite of that.
Yeah.
It is, I don't care if you have 5,000 watching you, talk like you're talking to one person.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a flip on that. So let's go from that now to this idea. So what was it that got you to say, okay, I've been doing this, you know, YouTube channel for my church. I want to do something else now. Where did that idea for this this Old Me Living Better YouTube channel come from?
Well, part of it was, and we've talked before about this, I've been bivocational for 50 years. I've been in the ministry for 50 years. I've owned a PR firm. I worked for CompuServe, AOL, and Netscape. I had my own painting business. I worked for a law firm. I've done a lot of different things. I've always been bivocational, except for about 5 years ago, when I turned 75, the church is doing really well. Salary was fine. So I took a break from being bivocational. When I turned 80, I discovered I missed being bivocational. Also, I didn't start saving for retirement until I was in my mid-60s. I've got Social Security and some retirement, Carl, but I got to tell you, I looked at my books and I said, you know what? we're going to have a hard time making it if I ever do retire. So I, part of my goal was to establish a side income. So in 2025, I made a little over $20,000 just from my YouTube channel through the AdSense program, which when you become monetized, that's what they call that, from sponsorships, affiliate programs. I never expected to make that much money. My goal when I started was to average $1,000 a month after 2 years. I've exceeded that goal now, and I'm only doing it part-time. So it's working for me, and I'm blessed that God led me into doing that. But to be honest with you, I was getting bored. I hate to say that. I'm not bored of preaching. I love to preach. But being bivocational for so long and then 5 years not doing it, I there was a part of me that wanted to get back in the game, and I needed some finances to support the future. That's the impetus. Boy, that's a lot longer answer than you wanted.
No, that's exactly what I wanted. So talking to the person who's in that position, they're looking at the church, and church finance dynamics have changed since you and I came into ministry, even in the last 20 years. 25 years ago, a congregation of 100 in most American places could probably support a pastor on a fairly decent salary, livable if they were, you know, living tight. Today, you're not going to do that till you hit at least 200, probably. So you've got a lot more pastors, because the average size church is 50 to 65. A lot of pastors out there who need to earn a second income are trying to figure out ways to do it where it isn't punching a clock, so that they have the ability to do it in their own time, and they have the ability to have the flexibility with ministry. Having a YouTube channel that's monetized is a great way to do that. So what were your first steps that you took that got you to such amazing numerical success so quickly?
A couple of things. First of all, I advise people now, if you're going to get on YouTube and your goal is to make a side income or a full-time income, you've got to give it a couple of years. Right. The average YouTube, matter of fact, very few people get monetized. It's very small compared to all of the channels on YouTube. And I think it takes an average of a year for people to get monetized. I think the first 6 months of any YouTube channel, you need to start by trying to figure out your why. Simon Sinek has a great book. I think he's the author of that one.
Yeah, Simon Sinek, yeah.
Yeah, Finding Your Why. It's a terrific book because, and it fits in with God's purpose. For me, as I aged, I discovered that the purposes that I had when I was 20, 30, and 40, when you get to the fourth quarter of your life, your purpose changes. I mean, your life doesn't change, but matter of fact, let me put it this way. In my congregation, I've got a lot of people that get to the congregation and they're depressed. And the first thing I ask them is this: when you were younger, what did you want to do? And people say, I wanted to play the guitar. I wanted to be an artist. I got a lady in my congregation that started painting, taking classes in her 70s. And 2 years later, she's selling paintings in local art galleries. Got another guy that took up the guitar 3 years ago. He's doing his own concerts. So in the fourth quarter of your life, you can revive things that you didn't do earlier or you left behind. And when you get ready to do a YouTube channel for a pastor or anybody that's retired, I encourage people to sit down, take enough time to figure out your why. Why do you want to do a YouTube channel? What are you going to share? I advise people to do this. It's what I did. I have over here in my living room a huge case that's got about 5,000 photos, the old photos you used to take and get printed, mm-hmm. right? They're not on your phone. When I turned 80, I sat down for 3 days, went through all of those photos, Carl, and I set aside the ones that would be potential to share a lived experience in a YouTube video. I imagine most people that are in the fourth quarter, you go through all of those albums, you will find photos that are the genesis or the root of a story or something that you can share from your lived experience. The advantage to fourth quarter creators are they have more lived experience, more perspective that they can bring to a channel. And the only way to stand out on YouTube these days, because there's so many channels out there talking about retirement and all different kinds of, you have to bring your unique perspective, your unique lived experience. But a lot of people don't know what that is. So I say, start with your photo album. Start there. Spend a week or two going through those with your family members even. And that will jog your memory. I can't believe how many people I share that with. That's how they got started on YouTube.
Okay. So did you start because you wanted to have a YouTube channel, or because you had these ideas you wanted to get out and YouTube was the best way to do it, or because you wanted to earn side income? Which was the first motivating factor for you?
I think the first motivating factor is I love online community. I've been online since the CompuServe days when I had a Radio Shack Model 100. I have that love for technology. Right. I was familiar with YouTube, so familiarity was part of that. My main desire was to get on and share lived experience. I had no idea my channel would take a pivot like it has. I was going to share just lived experience. And then in the back of my mind, wasn't in the front, was, hey, it'd be great if this thing would make some money. So I gave myself a couple of years for that to happen. So the first was to fill that void that I felt was a kind of a hole in my life. The second was to share lived experience might be helpful to others. And in the back of my mind, down number three was an economic component.
Okay. And I think, as you said, because of the low percentage of YouTube channels that get monetized, if you're going to go into YouTube, the monetization shouldn't be your primary, because the likelihood of it becoming monetized is so small, right?
Well, the YouTube Partner Program, I have 44,000 subscribers, and I average between 300 and 700 a month from the AdSense program. That's what YouTube pays me. I've had months where they paid me a couple grand when I've had viral videos, but the average is $300, $500, $600 a month. However, I have an Amazon affiliate that I promote books on my YouTube channel. My Amazon affiliate averages $500 to $600 a month. I have a buy me a coffee where people can give me a, you know, buy me a coffee, kind of like a donation. That averaged $300 to $500 a month. I've had sponsors that have paid me $2,000 and $3,000 for one video. So there's a lot of things in the overall perspective. You're looking for some kind of an average. You figure out how much money do I need to make as a side income. You figure that out. Then there are a lot of different ways that you can make that money online. However, when it comes to YouTube, that's my experience. I don't have a shopping channel and all of those kinds of things. But on YouTube, just having a channel getting monetized is not going to get to that goal unless you have 200,000, 300,000 subscribers or a million subscribers. Yeah. YouTube won't pay that kind of money.
Yeah, I mean, $300 to $700 a month for 44,000 subscribers, it gives people an idea of how much you've got to get in order to get very little.
Yeah.
But I love what you're talking about there. Just like investment specialists will tell you to diversify your portfolio, what you're saying for, and I agree with you, for those going into retirement or simply for pastors who are looking at bivocational income, don't look at just one bivocational source for all of your income. That is a very unlikely to be able to do that. But look at multiple smaller ones, because when you put all of those numbers together, each one of those on their own is small, but you add them all together and it becomes something that can actually be the supplement that you need. I do the same thing in my ministry. We do conferences, we do webinars, I sell books, we have donors. And between all of those coming together, we have a barely livable income, but it is livable. We do need more donors. So if you're out there and you want to be a donor, we'll hear from you. But we have recognized all the way along that there's not going to be one magic bullet that this one particular thing is going to bring in my income. It's got to be multiple income streams.
Absolutely. And I think the diversification is so important. When I started my YouTube channel, I immediately started an email list. That email list has got over 1,000 people on it now. That's apart from YouTube. So if YouTube ever goes down or you get demonetized or your channel is shut down, you don't lose those people. I also started a paid school community, S-K-O-O-L. And that community brings in some income, but it also is a place for me to do teaching and share share how to grow a channel apart from YouTube. Right now, YouTube is shutting down an awful lot of channels because of AI slop, and a lot of people have been caught up in that, and a lot of people lost their channels. You never know. There's no guarantees in it, so you have to diversify not only your income streams, but your visibility in places that you're going to be at.
Yeah, and especially online, you don't want your income or even your ministry opportunities to be completely dependent on sites that are owned by others. YouTube is owned by somebody else. Facebook is owned by somebody else. You've got your own website, just like I've got my own website, and that's owned by me. That's owned by you. And in the other ways, you're diversifying in all those different places. So if one goes down, you still have others. So that's a real important thing also for us. I remember, it's been a while now, but back in the early Facebook days when I didn't update constantly, but every once in a while, every 6 months or so, they'd come up with some big update and some big change, and everybody, I'm never going on Facebook again because I can't find this or whatever. And it's like, they're giving you the channel for free here, and some people even make money on it. They can change it whenever they want to. If you don't realize that you're in someone else's yard, then you've got to pay attention.
And all of these platforms now have monetization platforms. Facebook, you can now earn money on Facebook. I did have three different channels in the RV sector on Facebook for a time where I had 10, 15,000 members in each one of those RV channels. But that was before Facebook allowed you to get monetized. Now you can get monetized your content on Facebook. So you need to sort of pick a platform. Well, start with pick your message, pick your purpose, pick your why, pick your budget, what you need to earn, and then maybe explore the different platforms. Instagram, I'm not a big fan of TikTok and Instagram, but all of those are money sources, and some people are on all three or four of them. I'm all in on YouTube. I do have a Facebook account, but I don't do much with it.
Yeah, understood. Well, let's get to the last subject I wanted to talk to you about, because even before we started recording, you were talking about retirement, pastor retirement, and we do have this massive wave of pastoral retirements coming. I talked with Sam Rayner about it, as I mentioned earlier, and we don't have an incoming class of younger ministers that will match the outgoing class. And I know you've got some wisdom and some thoughts on that. So where should we start thinking about this particular issue, in, especially in the American church right now?
I really love that interview. I listened to it. I think the only answer is you have to look within and not without. The seminaries, I'm not happy with the way the seminaries have gone. Some denominations have built-in programs. Those will work. Problem is, a lot of the really great pastors within the denominations have seen that going non-denominational outside of the denomination is more attractive, and we've lost a lot of young pastors. It's anecdotal. I don't have any research on that. But I think that's where a lot of the younger pastors have gone. They don't want to be connected with a denomination, you know? But I think internally is the way to do it. I don't know how to do it, frankly. I'm too much out of the loop of it now. My particular church, I have at least 50 pastors waiting in line for me to drop dead. No, I'm serious, Carl. I know a few of them.
Oh, yeah. No, you've got a plum assignment that a whole bunch of folks in our generation would love to have. Yep.
But see, in one regards, I was smart. I was working for Lloyd Copenbarger when I started pastoring this church. He's an estate planning attorney. The very first year I came to this congregation, I started pitching them on getting an estate plan together. Do you know, Carl, that if we never took an offering again in our congregation, our entire budget is met through endowments that came through the estate planning efforts I made 35 years ago in this congregation. And the problem is, a lot of churches ran the old people off. That was where the endowments were. That was where the estate planning were. Yeah. And when they left, they take that they take that money with them. A lot of congregations would be, well, I'm ranting on, as you can tell. It really aggravates me, you know.
Yeah, years ago, the kind of mantra of a lot of church leaders was, you got to move your church forward, you got to get younger, and if the old folks don't like it, well, that's fine. And then every once in a while, somebody would come up with something like you, but they're the ones who pay the bills. And there was a certain amount of that I always kind of cringed against, because I don't want to treat someone as a slot machine, as an ATM. Well, you're paying the bills, therefore I'm going to treat you better. That should never be the basis by which we treat somebody well or poorly, depending on how much money they're giving. But going back to the beginning of our conversation, when we silo our seniors over here into you guys do this ministry and you're just going to, if you're in the Midwest, you're going to go to Branson once a year, if you're, you know, or whatever that might be. And we're one, taking some of the wisdom and we're kind of removing it at a distance from us. Two, we're devaluing the contributions that they make. And so I wouldn't do it because of that, but that is a side benefit of it is, yeah, you do have that opportunity. They are going to be higher givers. They're going to have a greater ability to help out and they're going to bring wisdom. So let's integrate them into the entire culture of the church rather than siloing them off into their own department. I got no problem with having seniors ministry nights. We have it in our church about 3-4 times a year. We call them the classics, and our classics meet and the seniors get together and we do stuff that works for our age group. But we are also integrated into the congregation and we have a very young congregation, but there's a real love and a real care for our seniors integrated into the entire thing. So much wisdom in this, and I really hope that people pay attention to what you've done, what you're doing. And if people do want to reach out to you and learn a little bit more, is there a way that people can do that and get more information from you, Mike?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time building my brand. You can go on any search engine, Google or Safari, anywhere, type in Old Me Living. That's it, Old Me Living. I come up number one or two on every search engine that's out there. That will take you to my channel. My email address is in the description of my channel if you want to reach out to me. But type in Old Me Living anywhere you can on the internet. You'll probably find me.
You'll see Mike's smiling face there. And we'll make sure that links to all of his stuff is in our show notes as well. But before you go, you know, because you're a podcast listener, you've got the lightning round questions that are coming up. Let's take a look at them. First of all, what are the biggest changes you've seen in your field of ministry in the last few years, and how have you adapted to them?
Cremation.
That is not what I expected.
So in 35 years, I've done almost 200 funerals. Mm-hmm. I've sent two congregations to heaven, then I got known in the funeral industry out here, so people invite me to do funerals. I haven't done a funeral, a real funeral with a real body in 2 years, and we've had probably 25 or 30 in our congregation die. Really? Everybody's getting cremated. And the other thing is that very few are doing memorial services anymore. Maybe it's just in the age, maybe it's the baby boomer kids or Gen X kids of the parents that are passing away that don't want to go through all the rigmarole. And I got to tell you, in my congregation, everybody said, I don't want a funeral. I don't want a big deal. Well, their kids are believing them. They're not giving them a big deal, you know? So what happens instead, I go to somebody's home or I go to a gravesite. That's it. No more big memorial service and no more bodies.
Wow, that's interesting. I was not anticipating that, but as you're describing it, I've seen that shift as well. So second question is this, what free resource like an app or a website, if you are familiar with apps and websites,
has helped you lately? Come on, give me a break, man. I have a great app.
What would you recommend for small church ministry, apps or websites, some kind of free resource?
Okay. This is specifically for seniors. It's called called Snug, S-N-U-G. The website is snugsafe.com. It's a check-in app. I've been using it for a year. My wife, Judy, who I know you've probably met, unfortunately, she's now pretty much invalid. So I'm the full-time caregiver for my wife, full-time pastor, and part-time YouTuber. So my family, they're all over the country. They get worried about me. I didn't want to carry something around my neck all the time. So I got this app called snugsafe.com. And it's an app that's on my iPhone. And it every morning, it gives me an alarm at 6 a.m. I need to check in. If I don't check in by 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, forgot what I get it set up, it will then call my kids. If then they can't reach me, then it calls 911, comes to my house. And they've got wonderful testimonies of people that have been saved from death because of the check-in apps. There's several different ways to do it, but I love this little app, Snug, S-N-U-G.
That's a great idea. Snugsafe.com. I just looked it up. We'll put that in the show notes, and I've
Okay.
got some people I'm going to talk to about that right away. Absolutely.
All right.
That's great. Number three, what's the best piece of ministry advice you've ever received?
Absolutely got it. The first year I was in the ministry, sat down with the denominational leader out to lunch. He leaned across the table and he said, "You may be right. There's a wrong way to do a right thing. You may be right, but there's a wrong way to do a right thing." Now, Carl, I wish I'd followed that advice over the years because I really didn't. But that's what I learned. I try to live by that. Be careful on the swords that you're willing to fall on. You may be right, there's a wrong way to do it.
Yeah, I love that. That's really, really important. And then number four, what's the funniest or weirdest thing you've ever seen in church?
Well, you can imagine, Carl, in a
Yeah.
senior's church, I could write a book on this one.
Yeah, I kind of thought that might be the case.
Well, one of the problems is, people in my congregation tend to go to sleep. I mean, when you're 75, I had one lady who lived to be 111, and she was driving her car at 105. So
Wow.
you got all these seniors together, and you cannot preach for an hour and a half. I got to tell you, 20 minutes it probably is the max, or they're asleep on you. I had one brother. We were in the meeting room. We're in now pretty good sized room. He's in the back. I'm in the middle of my message, and all of a sudden I hear this thump, and he fell asleep and fell right off the chair onto the ground. Well, we had to stop the service, call 911. Next Sunday, our head usher, here comes Roy, a little embarrassed from the previous week. He goes to sit on his seat, and my head usher had gone to the auto store and bought a seat belt and wraps that seat belt around Brother Roy. Entire congregation cracked up. Of course, we warned him, if you get sleepy, we're going to break out the seat belts. That's
That's
it,
a
Carl.
classic. Oh, I love that one. That one's tremendous. Mike, thank you so much. You've been a good friend for so many years, and you're doing such great ministry, and you're able to help, I think, a lot of pastors today. I hope they do reach out to you. We will put all of your contact information in the show notes so people can find you when they need to. But Mike, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for your friendship, buddy.
Yeah, thank you, Carl. God bless you, man.
You know, of all the topics Mike and I talked about, the one I want to draw your attention to as we finish this episode is this. Ministry to seniors or in your senior years, what Mike calls the fourth quarter, doesn't have to be old, tired, or a sign of failure. You can minister well in a church filled with seniors or alongside the seniors in a congregation that has a wide cross-section of ages, but here's a strategy to keep in mind. Seniors' ministry isn't static. It doesn't change as quickly as ministry to younger people changes, but it's still something to pay attention to. If your church has a large group of people in their 70s and 80s, pay attention to the life experiences they've just gone through, like retirement or maybe parenting their grandchildren, and ask, how can we use the wisdom and experience of those recent events in their lives to help people in their 50s and 60s who are coming into those stages of life? This is a great way to keep your seniors active, to meet the needs of your community, and to reach an incoming group of seniors that your church can minister to for decades to come. This episode was produced by Veronica Beaver. It was edited by Phil Vaders. Original theme music was written and performed by Jack Wilkins of jackwilkinsmusic.com. The graphic design is by Solomon Joy. And me, I'm Carl Vaders, and I hope to talk with you again in the church lobby.